So for much of this world, this is a big weekend coming up. It's Easter on Sunday. It's Passover starts tomorrow night. So I thought part of my talk tonight, which is mainly about self-compassion, would be talking about the two themes that I think call to me most about these celebrations. The theme that calls to me most about Passover is freedom and the history of freedom and people really going for freedom. And in this context, it's freedom in our own minds, freedom from those horribly judgmental thoughts that, and talking to ourselves in ways that we would never talk to a friend because they wouldn't be our friend anymore if we did. So I want to talk some about freedom and also about what for me is sort of the most compelling part of Easter is the Christ's forgiveness. And so I wanted to talk also about that and in context of, since it's again about self-compassion, forgiving ourselves. So before I do that, I wanted to give you a little background about self-compassion. Some of you may be wondering, well, what is all this about? Well, there's kind of a big movement that's been started by two main, I think it really started way long ago with every religious leader really comes down to talking about really being kind to yourself. But somehow religion can get a little distorted and unkind at times. But in very recent times, Kristen Neff is a researcher at the University of Texas, and she's done years of research on self-compassion. Before that, she studied self-esteem. And so she wrote this great book, which is really very, very accessible. It's great reading. It's not just boring research studies, but it's really a wonderful book that I highly recommend. And I'm so impressed by Kristen, just by who she is, and especially by the fact that she's the mother of an autistic child. So in that capacity alone, that calls on every ounce of self-compassion possible. And then also she's joined, while she does a lot of the research and teaching, she's joined by Christopher Germer, who's at Harvard in clinical psychology. So the two of them have joined forces. They're both very sincere Vipassana practitioners. In fact, they rolled out their self-compassion course at the Forest Refuge back at the Insight Meditation Society. And they have taken the Buddhist practices and concepts and put them into an accessible form, sort of following MBSR, which is mindfulness-based self-compassion, the 8-week course that Jon Kabat-Zinn developed after sitting at the Insight Meditation Society. So they've done the same thing, but this is focused on self-compassion. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what is self-compassion. And it's based on Kristen Neff's model, there's three main components. The first one is self-kindness versus self-judgment. So with compassion, we treat ourselves with kindness, with care, with understanding and support, just like we would treat a friend whom we really cared about. You know, often we treat our pets better than we treat ourselves. Most people can be rather harsh in their language towards themselves. And compassion is concerned with alleviating suffering. And that means there's an action component to the compassion. It's not just saying, you know, okay, I'm compassionate. You do something about it. So that's the first and foremost, it's self-kindness. Secondly, it's common humanity versus isolation. With self-compassion, we experience our own imperfection as part of the larger human experience, and we recognize that everyone suffers, that this is normal. Often, especially in a competitive society like our own, when we suffer, we assume that we've done something wrong. Because after all, winners don't suffer. So, you know, or it doesn't look that way. Now, if it were 200 years ago, it would be so out in the open. And it still is in sort of more, less materialistic societies. But in ours, we can kind of hide it away, mask it, whatever. So people can be looking like, I mean, look at all our celebrities. You know, they look like they're having a great life, and then you find out more about them. So there's this common humanity piece that really, as the Buddha said, everyone suffers. There's just suffering in life. It's not that you're wrong or bad because you're suffering. And the third component is mindfulness versus over-identification. So often we get so involved that either we have very harsh self-judgment or we completely try to numb ourselves and not feel the suffering. And so in this program, it's more just being mindful and with the suffering and really knowing that we're suffering and feeling that we're suffering, not trying to escape from that, but not trying to dramatize that and make that really big. So because Kristen Neff is a great researcher, she's done a lot of research on self-compassion. And in fact, you can go on her website and there's 21 pages of just little, a zillion studies per page, you know, so if you really are interested, you can do that. If you just Google self-compassion, Kristen Neff comes up immediately, and so does Chris Gerber. Evidence shows that self-compassion is really powerfully linked to well-being. It's strongly associated with reduced negative stress states like depression, anxiety, and stress. And it's strongly linked with positive states like happiness, life satisfaction, and optimism. So it's also, interestingly enough, linked to increased motivation. Now, that's one of the reasons why we often are so critical, self-critical. We've often thought, and it's the parenting that we hand down, it's the spare the rod and spoil the child. So don't do that. Really hold them up to high, high, high standards. Keep pushing them because that will motivate them. But in fact, it's been shown that it does the opposite, because people become paralyzed and they become really afraid of making efforts, and certainly any kind of new or unusual efforts, because they're afraid of failing. So actually, with self-compassion, you have less fear of failure and greater likelihood to try again after failing. And it's also linked to health behaviors such as exercise, quitting smoking, less alcohol use. It's also linked to personal accountability, including taking greater responsibility for mistakes and apologizing. After all, if you don't have to be a terrible person just because you blew it, then it's easier to say, you know, I did it and I'm really sorry. So there's better coping and resilience, there's better romantic relationships, and there's greater compassion and empathy for others. That's the other thing people think, does that mean I'm being selfish? Well, actually, when you think about it, people who get really depressed get very self-involved. I mean, that's just part of the package. So, rather than doing that, when you're feeling good about yourself, there's only so much materialism that satisfies that. And then you have this sort of urge to spill over and to connect and help others. And so That's one of the research findings. I'll tell you one of the findings that they found out, just in case you want to do this. They had people write themselves a one-paragraph compassionate letter to themselves every day for a week. And just doing that one paragraph a day, self-compassion, just, you know, you go along and you think about, oh, yeah, I blew this today. And then you, oh, it's okay, Jane. I know you were trying, but you were late and you were rushed and you just didn't, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, you got it? So, and you write this out. You do it one paragraph a day on something you blew for a week. And it showed that decreased depression lasted up to 3 months and increased happiness lasted up to 6 months. So you can imagine. I mean, you know, that's pretty phenomenal. So when you think about it, our body's threat system, our defense system evolved so that when the amygdala, which is that almond-shaped cluster that's always on the lookout for threats and danger, you know how Rick Hansen has said we're Velcro for negative experiences and Teflon for positive experiences, well, our physical body threat defense system releases a lot of cortisol and adrenaline into our system when we feel threatened. So those are stress hormones, basically. It's great if you have to run and if you really have to get out of town fast. But otherwise, you know, it's not healthy, especially if you're doing it over and over and over again. You know, if you're doing it because you're late on the freeway and then you're doing it because you're on a long line at the shopping market and on, you know, it has its toll, not only on your mood, but on your long-term health. So I wanted to talk a little bit about forgiveness, given my take on Easter. And wanted to say that, you know, given so much of who we are, and we find out more and more in science, so much of who we are is determined by our genetic makeup, by our parenting, by all the experiences that conditioned us when we were young. We inherited our temperaments from our grandparents and grandparents. There's been so many influences that it's really a shame that we hold ourselves to such a high standard and are so unforgiving when we make mistakes. In fact, a lot of us, it's one thing to feel guilt, and guilt is when you say, oh, I did a bad thing. But it's another thing to feel shame. And the difference between guilt and shame is, guilt is I did a bad thing, shame is I am a bad person. And many people are walking around with a lot of shame, like they just don't think they're good people. So I wanted to lead you through a practice of forgiving yourself tonight, because I thought it was really in keeping with the upcoming holiday. Let's see. So think about something you want to forgive yourself for, and you don't have to think of the most overwhelming thing. I want you to leave here in a good mood. But maybe you did something today, or maybe you've done something recently, or maybe it's an old one and you just want to chip away at it. You know, whatever. But think of something you'd like to forgive yourself for, and you can close your eyes if you want or not. So now, take a few moments to consider how your actions impacted others. And really allow yourself to look. Maybe it's not so pretty, but it's really good for us to be aware of that. yourself to feel some regret and remorse. And notice anywhere in your body that you feel the guilt or the shame or the regret or the remorse. See if you can feel it in your body. There's an old saying that says, you feel it, you heal it. And recognize that it's only human to make mistakes. I think if we asked any really honest person about their lives, everyone would admit, certainly, to making mistakes. So offering yourself compassion for how you've suffered. Perhaps saying, may I be free from fear. Or may I be free from shame. Or may I be kind to myself. Or may I accept myself just as I am. You know, accepting ourselves as we are is just saying, yeah, I did blow it there. And what that allows us to do is to really see that we are capable of doing that, but if we feel the regret and remorse, it allows us also more reason not to do it again. Whereas if we don't really admit to ourselves that we've done it, there's not that same motivation to not repeat it. Now we're going to try to understand some factors that led to your mistake. So look and see if there were any environmental factors impacting you at this time. Were you perhaps hungry or tired or exhausted or really hot or feeling a little sick? Or were certain aspects of your personality triggered? Now, seeing if you can offer yourself forgiveness and knowing that this might be an ongoing process. So it might be better to say, may I begin to forgive myself for what I've done, wittingly or unwittingly, to have caused harm. It's always good to begin, and then you don't have to feel any sense of failure if you haven't completely forgiven yourself. Just begun forgiving yourself. And if it feels right, resolve not to make the same mistake again, at least to the best of your ability. And now I'm going to bring in an awareness piece on top of this and just ask you to look, what did it feel like to contact the pain you experienced due to your own mistake? Could you offer yourself compassion? Was there any resistance? Were you able to identify factors that led to your behavior? Was there any resistance to doing that? And what was it like to use the forgiveness phrases, especially wittingly or unwittingly? And how do you feel right now? So what I'm going to ask you to do, if you want to, is to partner up either two or three people, and you don't need to talk about what you did. And that's that you can if you want, but don't feel like you have to share that. It's more the process about, are you able to forgive yourself? Or maybe you're not ready to, but are you ready to begin to forgive yourself, knowing that it might be for a while? And or if not, do you have resistance? What are your thoughts that you aren't worthy of forgiveness? And can you identify factors that led to your behavior? And the phrase wittingly or unwittingly, sometimes we don't know what we're doing, and we only see afterwards the pain it's caused. And sometimes we do know, you know, and that's pretty humbling. I'll get him, you know, that kind of thing. It's pretty humbling, but on the other hand, the Buddha said that actually it's better karma if you do know, because that's your only chance of changing your behavior later. So even if you act vindictively and know it, that sounds kind of grim, it's better to know it, at least. Otherwise, you can just repeat endlessly these behaviors that aren't helpful. So why don't we spend a little time, and of course, if you want to pass, just pass. If you'd rather just be with yourself and think about this, that's fine. Otherwise, spend a little time partnering up so you can tell someone else about the experience of forgiveness. Like I said, you don't have to talk about what you did. Is that clear? Okay. So I'll give you about 5 minutes or so. Okay, come on back. Does anybody have anything that they want to share? And again, it's not about, you don't have to publicly confess to anything, but anything you noticed in this process. Yeah, let's see. Maybe we could have, thank you. Okay.
I was judging myself for what I picked, and then I realized that I was, and what I picked was judging my judgment and finding some spaciousness and kindness around that. But I think that what I would like to forgive myself for is judging my own judgment. And then and then it was like, how do I even, you know, it just becomes a cycle sometimes when I do notice. And then I find that it comes from a need to control. And that the judgment is just trying to control things that I can't control.
Oh, nice insight.
And then that's pretty much okay.
Yeah, good. So maybe you can, I mean, you're certainly laughing about it now. Maybe if you can kind of remember this, it would be, there you go again, you know? And just bringing a lighter attitude to something that, because it's awareness you're bringing to it. It's just that you want to cultivate awareness with a real, real kindness. That's the practice. You're right. Good.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I want to recommend getting older. I'm now well into my 80s.
Wow.
And I have discovered that an awful lot of that shit just falls away.
Yay.
And a lot of things just don't... I think I'm a much nicer person than perhaps I was. But mostly, thinking about it, you know, the biggest regret I have in my life, and I can say this, is that I quit taking piano lessons and practicing the piano when I was 15.
Okay.
And I would give anything to be able to
to really do that.
Back.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
All
so,
right.
You know, just get older. There's a downside to it, but
I don't know. I mean, I think as we get older, we keep cultivating certain habits, and that's one of my motivations for wanting to get as much, many of my ducks in a row as possible now. You know, I've been into homes, you know, for the elderly, nursing homes and whatever, and some people look really crabby, and everything's wrong. And but my favorite friend, I used to visit Helen Bellock. I mean, I'd come in and all the attendants would, oh, Helen, yeah, she's down, roommate, you know, that kind of thing. And then I'd go in and I'd say, Helen, your nails look beautiful. She's, oh, I'm going to be on Oprah this afternoon, and, you know, all this stuff. But she was just great. And I thought, I want to be like you, you know. I want to, if I'm going to lose it all, I want to at least, you know. So, so I suspect you're doing something right to age with grace, you know, and you've cultivated some good habits. That's what I suspect.
Well, I do have a kind of personal mantra. Keep learning, keep loving, keep laughing.
Beautiful.
Those are my three L's.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. Thank you very much. Okay, going. All right. Now I wanted to read you a poem that probably most of you are pretty familiar with, but it's a nice one along this line. It's Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you about mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese harsh and exciting over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. And just one point I want to make about, because part of self-compassion is also forgiving others, because of course if we hold on to anger about how we've been mistreated, as the Buddha said, it's like holding on to a hot burning coal or drinking poison and thinking the other person is going to suffer. So I really like this one on compassion. Have compassion for everyone you meet, even if they don't want it. What appears bad manners and ill temper or cynicism is always a sign of things no ears have heard, no eyes have seen. You do not know what wars are going on down there where the spirit meets the bone. So now on to the freedom part, the other part of the weekend, Passover. Last summer I was in Munich visiting a German friend, and we were in downtown and I saw this train pull out that said Dachau, and I went, oh my gosh. And it turns out Dachau is very close to Munich, and my father always wanted me to visit a concentration camp. He was of Jewish descent, and he was in World War II, and I'm sure he identified with the liberators, but he basically was somebody who loved freedom, loved the Constitution, and basically wanted everybody to be aware of what could go wrong. So I did visit. I got my German friend to go. And by the way, in Germany now, that's part of their required school trips, field trips they go to visit. And so we went. And I have to say, for me, it wasn't quite as moving as I've been to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. and in Jerusalem. And I think if you ever have a chance, if you're in Washington, they do an amazing job. And one of the most moving images that I can't get out of my mind is the humongous pile of children's shoes. You know, it just goes, ugh. So, but the reason I say this is because I went there and I thought, wow, what would I have done? You know, it's just filled with statistics. And, you know, I went in the gas chambers and the cells and the this and the that. And I thought, you know, I don't know what I would have done, because if you couldn't take it anymore, all you had to do is run for the fence and you'd get shot. And that would be the end. But that's a terrible choice, right? And whereas the happiness statistics say that once you meet a certain material level, materialism drops out in terms of your happiness level. It's not about how many more cars you can buy or whatever, but you do have to have some freedom. And it doesn't matter how much money you had, if you don't have freedom, there's really it's very hard to be happy. So as you know, Viktor Frankl was intern there, and he was a physician and neurologist. And he made meaning out of his life because he didn't know about whether his relatives would survive or not. He didn't know if he would. But he decided that he was going to spend whatever time he had left tending to other people and taking care of people and being kind to people and sharing whatever food and helping them be comfortable. And he said this line, which I love because it's so hits the point. Between the stimulus and response, there is a space. And in that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. So I'm suggesting we can do that for ourselves all the time, that the more mindful we become, the more aware we are of what thoughts, what attitudes we're having for ourselves. And so I wanted to teach you something that I think is a great intervention. And it gives you a little more freedom, and that is the self-compassion break. And you can, it's a very simple thing to remember, and it's very portable. So when you're going along, and I'll give you an example. I was in Brisbane going to Sydney, and I realized I didn't have my passport. I was at the airport. And so now you don't need a passport internally, but I went, uh-oh. And, you know, my body started to flood with cortisol and adrenaline, and, you know, there was no place to flee or fight or whatever. It was just between me and me. And so I told James, and he said, oh, time for self-compassion. I said, okay. So the self-compassion, the first part of it is that you recognize, you use mindfulness. Remember, that's one of the three components. You recognize that you're suffering. So you notice that you're suffering, and you say, this is a moment of suffering. Might be many moments of suffering, but it's at least a moment. So you acknowledge that to yourself. Some people say instead of that, they say, ouch, or this is stress, or this hurts, whatever gets at the point across to you. I say this is a moment of suffering. The second one is that common humanity piece, because immediately we start, I could start, oh my God, you know, what are you doing without your passport? What kind of traveler are you? Blah, blah, blah. You're trying to teach people to get their lives together and you don't have your passport? You know, that kind of thing. I could go on and on. So instead of that, the second line is suffering is part of life. That's the common humanity piece. We all blow it. And talk to anybody you respect and they will admit that they blow it. So suffering is part of life. And the third one is just an intention, and it is, may I be kind to myself? And I swear, this does really work. And if you practice this, it does set you on a different direction. So I want you to now think of some moderate, like I said before, I don't want you to go home all... You know, I want you to go home happy. Think of some moderate suffering in your life. And it helps, actually, after you've thought, I'll give you a moment to think about it. It helps to put your hand on your heart. And the reason that helps is because positive touch increases oxytocin. And that's the bonding hormone that new mothers are flooded with, because that means they'll take care of their newborn. So when we connect that way, the body gets oxytocin. So if you put your hand on your heart and you're thinking about whatever situation is suffering, you say to yourself, this is a moment of suffering. And just acknowledge it. See if you can feel it a little bit in your body. Suffering is part of life. May I be kind to myself? Okay, so any questions? Okay, so I wanted to end on a little, we've done a little suffering so far. I wanted to end on a different note, which is on self-appreciation. So we're grateful for many things in our lives, but it seems that we're rarely grateful for ourselves. We just aren't trained that way. More likely we criticize ourselves and focus on our inadequacies and take our good qualities kind of for granted. And this gives us a skewed perspective of who we are. And maybe you can relate to when you receive a compliment, it bounces off you. Or if you get a job review and there's, you know, all this glowing stuff, but one sentence that isn't so glowing and you kind of focus in on that, that's the one you tell your friend about. Okay. So why do you think it's so hard to celebrate our good qualities? Does anybody have any response? It's in our culture, yeah. It's the way our parents were taught, handed down, parent to child. Yeah?
I heard recently that evolutionarily, we are trained to have our mind kind of see what is abnormal or wrong in a situation so that we can learn from it to survive.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm imagining if we're going along and we pay particular attention to what we're lacking or what we're not good at because it's helpful to our survival and thriving in the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's true to a certain extent, yeah, and we certainly need to do that to get out of the way of danger. But also, I mean, that we have to look for good opportunities in order to find better food and shelter, too. So that instinct is in us, and some cultures do it more than others. So...
can sound like you're bragging.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And so other people look down on you for doing that?
Yeah, the people kind of resent it. Who do you think you are?
You see it in movies. If life is going too well, something bad's going to happen.
It's
almost like a
yep.
human.
Yep.
So that's sort of the sense I have. Why?
That's, I mean, that also could be sort of like we may attract the evil eye, mm-hmm. you know? And I mean, some cultures actually have all sorts of art around the evil eye. Turkish people make evil eye, yeah. Okay. Anything else? Yeah.
But even when you don't do it out loud and you're doing it quietly to yourself, you're still chastising yourself for kind of being conceited, or you've been trained not to kind of let things get to your head.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing well.
Don't get a swelled head about that. Yep. So we don't want to alienate our friends by seeming arrogant, right? So we would really have to keep it to ourselves, but we're so trained that way that we wouldn't even admit it to ourselves. Yeah. We're also maybe afraid of falling off the pedestal. If I say, what a great whatever I am, you know? Well, maybe today, but then... whatever. It also can make us feel disconnected from others at times, you know? I mean, it's a way we can keep ourselves small and therefore we're more liked, that kind of thing. So the task is, can we appreciate ourselves in a healthy way without feeling separate and without feeling better than others? And without setting up any kind of expectation that will be perfect, just that we'll be healthy, turning our gratitude inward, then it can manifest as self-appreciation. And the key to all of this is common humanity. When we appreciate our own beauty, we do so not because we're better than others, but because every human being has wonderful qualities in addition to their not-so-wonderful qualities. As the saying goes, I may not be perfect, but parts of me are excellent. So, okay. I want you to close your eyes and drop into your body one more time. Take a moment to think about two or three things. You won't have to tell anyone. Two or three things that you appreciate about yourself, that you really deep down like about yourself. Are there any people who helped you develop these good qualities? maybe friends or parents or teachers or authors of books who had a positive impact on you? And if so, please send them some gratitude and appreciation as well. When we appreciate ourselves, we're also appreciating all the people who've helped us become who we are today. So I want to end with a poem by Derek Walcott called Love After Love. The time will come when, with elation, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome and say, "Sit here, eat." You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread. Give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit. Feast on your life. That's by Derek Walcott. Thank you very much. May you be kind to yourself. Just try to catch yourself when you're out and about and you're having negative thoughts. Like, that's a moment, that awareness is a moment of possible freedom. And see if you can be a little kinder. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.